Good evening. The $2 trillion stimulus package hits a snag over extending unemployment benefits. Cuomo says the curve has gotten flatter, and a rent freeze for New Yorkers is proposed in Albany. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. Senate leaders race to unravel last-minute snags Wednesday and win passage of an unparalleled $2 trillion economic rescue package, steering aid to businesses, workers, and healthcare systems engulfed by the coronavirus pandemic. But the drive by leaders to speed the bill through the Senate was slowed as four conservative Republican senators demanded reductions in unemployment insurance payments. Employees don't earn more money if they're laid off than if they're working. Complicating the standoff, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont said he would block the bill unless the conservatives dropped their objections. Other objections floated in from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, whose state has seen more deaths from the pandemic than any other. He said, "I'm telling you, these numbers don't work." McConnell and Schumer hope passage of the legislation in the Republican-led Senate would come by the end of the day. The markets, expecting an agreement, rose but then lost most of the gains as it became clear the bill was being held up. Meanwhile, hospitalizations from COVID-19 were rising faster than expected in New York as residents and leaders prepared for a peak in cases. Cuomo says the number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 in the state has climbed to 3,800, with close to 900 in intensive care. Linda Perry has more.
New York officials are keeping a close eye on already stressed hospitals as the number of cases is projected to rise for another 2 to 3 more weeks. Cuomo said today that as many as 140,000 hospital beds may be needed. That's in a state that has only 53,000. New York State has more than 30,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus and 285 deaths. The nation-high figures are driven mostly by New York City. Cuomo says one reason is density, and he asked city officials to make some changes.
The New York City parks have been a problem. I saw the problem myself firsthand. I spoke to Mayor de Blasio. I spoke to Speaker Johnson. We said come up with a plan in 24 hours that everybody agreed with. They came up with a plan. We're now implementing that plan. I signed off on that plan. The plan is going to pilot closing streets in New York City because we have much less traffic in New York City. We have many fewer vehicles in New York City. Open streets. People want to walk. They want to go out and get some air. You want a less dense area. So pilot closing streets to cars, opening streets to pedestrians. We'll also enact mandatory playground social density, which is probably a new concept. No close contact sports in a playground. No basketball, for example. You cannot do it.
Meanwhile, Cuomo says density control measures enacted across the state may be working.
This past Sunday, the projection was that hospitalizations were doubling every 2 days, okay? On Monday, the numbers suggested that the hospitalizations were doubling every 3.4 days. On Tuesday, the projection suggested that the hospitalizations were doubling every 4.7 days. Now, that is almost too good to be true, but the theory is, given the density that we're dealing with, it spreads very quickly, but if you reduce the density, you can reduce the spread very quickly. So, these projections, I've watched them bounce all over the place, and I don't place a great deal of stock in any one projection, all due respect to all the great academics and statisticians who are doing it. But this is a very good sign and a positive sign.
Cuomo says he's not 100% sure it's accurate, but the arrows are pointing in the right direction. The number of COVID-19 cases in New York are far greater than any other state in the nation because the density is far greater here than in other areas, according to the governor. Going out to the suburbs, Nassau has 3,285 cases with 416 new cases. Suffolk County has 2,260 cases with 380 new cases. And in Westchester, Cuomo says they've slowed the infection rate. There are 4,691 who have the virus, 800 new cases. But it's New York City which has the most cases of COVID-19, 17,856 with 2,952 new cases. This is out of more than 12,000 new tests done statewide. As the rate of infection accelerates, New York State could be 2 or 3 weeks away from a crisis that sees 40,000 people in intensive care. This kind of surge would swamp hospitals, which only have 3,000 intensive care unit beds in the entire state, and each of the ICU beds requires a ventilator. Dropping his aggressive stance from yesterday, the New York governor said he spoke with Donald Trump last night and again this morning with Mike Pence and other members of the Trump administration like Kushner, advocating for rolling deployment of ventilators, 15,000 of them in the federal stockpile. He wants them to be used in New York until the crisis is over and then moved along with personnel to the next hotspot for the virus. A positive note is there have been 40,000 responses so far from physicians and nurse practitioners and physician assistants and respiratory therapists and others to join in the effort to combat this virus. And 6,175 mental health workers have signed up to volunteer to help people in need with mental health issues as this crisis continues throughout our state. That hotline number, the mental health hotline number, is 844-863-9314. Again, that's 844-863-9314. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Although New York is the current focus of the deadly pandemic, fears are rising that rural America may be next in the crosshairs, with remote areas far from communications and hospitals. The routine of bingo night, local diners, and potluck dinners are becoming taboo. In some areas, like Utah, there's been a pushback against social distancing and business closures and a call for a return to normalcy. In Texas, GOP Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said it's time to get back to work and that people over the age of 70, who the Centers for Disease Control say are at higher risk for coronavirus, will take care of themselves.
We can't lose our whole country. We're having an economic collapse. I'm also a small businessman. I understand it. And I talk with business people all the time, Tucker. And my heart is lifted tonight by what I heard the president say, because we can do more than, you know, one thing at a time. We can do two things. So, you know, my message is that let's get back to work. Let's get back to living. Let's be smart about it. And those of us who are 70 plus, we'll take care of ourselves, but don't sacrifice the country. Don't do that. Don't ruin this great American dream.
So you're basically saying that this disease could take your life, but that's not the scariest thing to you. There's something that would be worse than dying.
Yeah.
President Trump has already said that he hopes to ramp social distancing and the closure of businesses in the United States, ramp down social distancing and the closure of businesses in the United States by Easter, which is in mid-April this year. But Dr. Anthony Fauci of the National Institutes of Health, who sits on the White House Coronavirus Task Force, was more cautious, speaking at a news conference.
We just had a conversation with the president in the Oval Office talking about, you know, you can look at a date, but you've got to be very flexible. And on a literally day by day and week by week basis, you need to evaluate the feasibility of what you're trying to do. And John, you asked for, you know, what kind of metrics, what kind of data. When you look at the country, I mean, obviously no one is going to want to tone down things when you see what's going on in a place like New York City. I mean, that's just, you know, good public health practice and common sense. But the country is a big country, and there are areas of the country, and I refer to this in my opening remarks, that we really need to know more about what the penetrance is there. So if we do the kind of testing that we're doing, and testing will always be associated by identification, isolation, and contact tracing, and you find after a period of time that there are areas that are very different from other areas of the country, you may not want to essentially treat it as just one force for the entire country, but look at flexibility in different areas. So I think people might get the misinterpretation. You're just going to lift everything up, and even somebody's going like that. That's not going to happen. It's going to be looking at the data And what we don't have right now that we really do need is we need to know what's going on in those areas of the country where there isn't an obvious outbreak. Is there something underneath the surface that says, wait a minute, you better be careful and really clamp down? Or what looks there that you don't really have to be as harsh as you are in other areas. So it's looking at information that up to this point, John, we never had. So it's a flexible situation.
Dr. Anthony Fauci of the National Institutes of Health. Meanwhile, Senator Cory Gardner, Republican of Colorado, was upbeat about his state has smoked the others with their response to the coronavirus.
Coloradans have stepped up in every way possible. In a uniquely Colorado way, you have hemp businesses that are now producing cotton swabs for medical needs. You have whiskey distilleries that are producing hand sanitizers for hospitals, for home health care. We have protective equipment that's being donated by the Denver Broncos and by marijuana industry and by so many other businesses across the state of Colorado.
But Colorado's buzz is sure to be harshed when U.S. Department of Labor figures are released Thursday. They're expected to shatter the old record for the greatest number of new unemployment claims filed in a single week. Economist Jack Rasmus at St. Mary's College in California says the $2 trillion rescue package just won't be enough.
The U.S. economy is $1.7 trillion a month, and what you got here is about that amount. And if the economy shuts, half of it shuts down, that means that this stimulus, if it is totally spent, which I'm doubtful of, a lot of hoarding is going to go on by business, even consumers. You got about 2 months. You got 6 to 8 weeks of holding the economy up. And I think that's what they're believing, that this will be V-shaped, that it'll be short. But I don't believe that. When the real economic data starts coming in for in April and in May, people are going to be shocked. And those real indicators of jobs and GDP and so forth that I've been pointing out are going to be quite severe. And people are going to be shocked, and it's going to affect their investing, their spending, and everything. We're going to have another psychological dampening effect here in the next couple of months. And then, of course, overlaid on that, you have the problem of will we really get this virus under control? And what will be the impact in terms of health and therefore on the economy here? We could very well see another surge here, particularly if Trump sends people back to work, of the virus effect come April, come May. And that will really have a devastating psychological impact on the economy, a further one here. So it's kind of a stopgap measure for four to six weeks here to try to fill up the hole that's been created in the economy.
What could save this economy right now, and should it be saved?
It's going to take a true war, economic war mobilization, you see. Look at it historically. The U.S. GDP, government spending as a percent of GDP before World War II, right before, it was about 15-16%. In 1 year with the war mobilization, the government spending was 40%. It stayed that way throughout most of the war, or went higher. Right? The government is going to have to really get in and grab the economy, not rely on the private sector to voluntarily do it, because that is never really fully occurs. Trump is not a war president. He says he is. He activated the War Production Act, but he's done nothing with it, you see. It's just all spin. His typical press releases are all the marketing spin. And it's not really action going on economically, I don't think. The states and the governors are trying desperately to do that. He's lagging far behind. And I think that's a real problem. In 1942, Roosevelt immediately set up a board, a war production board, and immediately seized various production facilities, distribution, and so forth. They started building factories everywhere. The government then leased these factories for $1 to private enterprise. What happened was the government stepped in, federal government, big time. But that's not happening right now. I think they believe it's going to be V-shaped, very short, 6 to 8 weeks, and it'll be over and everything will snap back to where it was. But this crisis is going to have a serious impact on psychology of investors and business and consumers, and they're not going to jump back in with both feet even if under the best assumptions, this thing is contained fairly quickly in the next couple of months, which I don't think it will be.
Economist Jack Rasmus is author of the book, The Scourge of Neoliberalism. His article, The U.S. Senate's Final Stimulus Bill, Why It Won't Be Enough, is on counterpunch.org. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. One of the glaring omissions from the $2 trillion bailout that remains stalled in the U.S. Senate at this hour is any increase in food stamps known as SNAP benefits. SNAP is a favorite bugaboo of conservatives, and the Trump administration tried but failed to kick 700,000 unemployed people off the program earlier this year by a rule change that was blocked in the courts. For reasons that remain unexplained, a boost in SNAP proposed by Democrats was not included in the $2 trillion relief package. The CEO of Hunger Free America is Joel Berg. He says although the bill is necessary, it's terribly flawed.
The bill isn't all bad. It has expanded money for unemployment benefits, and that's important. It has some money for soup kitchens and food pantries, so that's good. But overall, it's a failure when it comes to the people in most need. There are 36 million Americans who get SNAP food stamps benefits. The average SNAP benefit is now $1.34 per meal. This would have raised it to $1.54 per meal, and yet the Republicans opposed it, and ultimately the Democrats cave to get the rest of the bill passed. So a bill that had $2 trillion, including hundreds of billions of dollars from corporations, most of which are run by millionaires. They couldn't find $10 billion just for hungry people.
Why is SNAP so controversial?
SNAP is controversial for two reasons among conservatives. Number one is they really don't like poor people, even though some of them may be poor people. And two, they want to send the nation the false message that most people who need help are non-white when the largest number of people who get SNAP are white. Somehow this is welfare. And at the same time, this bill is the biggest orgy of corporate welfare in American history. I'm not saying we didn't need money to bump up the economy, but they just look at the world very, very differently than I do, with an entirely different set of values. And they frankly snooker their base into think of that they're going after some other, when in fact the people being shafted most are the very people supporting the elected officials who are taking away their food. It's the most insane consequence of an overall insane time.
And especially since most of the food that's being purchased and the design of the bill when it was brought in, you know, the original SNAP program was to help American farmers.
If you give a tax cut to a wealthy person, they may not spend it, or if they do spend it, they'll build it on a yacht, spend it on a yacht that probably wasn't built in America, or some high-end electronic devices that weren't built in America. But when you give people money on their SNAP card, their EBT card, they're overwhelmingly purchasing food that was grown, shipped, warehoused, processed, manufactured, wholesaled, and retailed in America, creating American jobs. That's why every dollar spent on the SNAP program by the American taxpayers equals $1.8 in American economic activity. Mark Zandes, the chief economist of Moody's, who was once an advisor to John McCain's presidential campaign, so he's not exactly a Marxist-Leninist, he has said that SNAP is one of the best economic boosts to the economy.
So what do you do next? Are you going to try and get them to change what they've done?
If they can't change this bill, we're going to try to get a fourth bill that includes money for SNAP. And I've already been in touch with key congressional offices to see if we can get that done.
Anything you'd like to add?
We need our elected officials to stand up for the most vulnerable, not the people who went from being ridiculously mega rich to marginally less rich.
Joel Berg is CEO of Hunger Free America. For many New Yorkers, their next rent payment is just a few days away, due April 1st. In the midst of the public health emergency, Governor Andrew Cuomo did announce a 90-day moratorium on evictions for residential and commercial tenants. He also announced a mortgage relief plan for New Yorkers, which includes an option to waive mortgage payments based on financial hardship. State Senator Michael Gennaris says what's missing is protection for the millions who rent. He's introduced legislation that would suspend rent payments for 90 days and for smaller landlords provide mortgage forgiveness for the same time period. He spoke with WBAI earlier today.
There's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of New Yorkers who live paycheck to paycheck who now have lost their paycheck because we have ordered a shutdown of the economy in New York City. It was a necessary order to keep people away from each other and to stop the spread of coronavirus, but there are massive economic consequences that are going to hit the housing market in just 1 week. April 1st is coming up. Most rent payments are due then, and these are people that do not have money to pay their rent. And rather than allowing this to cascade into the future where 2 or 3 months of rent payments all come due at once after the eviction moratorium is lifted in 3 months, I thought it was prudent to put some regulatory structure around this, recognize that these rents are not going to be paid, don't ask people to pay their rents if we've prohibited them from working, and then we can also do some forgiveness on the mortgage side for the landlords that would suffer because of this, and hopefully then at the back end we'd be better prepared to get back on our feet and recover.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. What about the landlords? How would they be reimbursed for this loss?
Well, the same way we would be forgiving rents payable to the landlords, we would be forgiving mortgages for landlords that would be in need or in financial distress because they're not collecting rent anymore for the same 90-day period. So the mortgage payments would not be due just the same way the rent payment would not be due.
Right, but the city doesn't own the mortgages. Is this a deal that you'd have to work out with banks and things like that? How would this actually be worked out?
Well, look, there is going to be sacrifice required across the board, and there's going to be some point where this chain reaction ends. What we're trying to do is spread it out as best we can. So tenants don't pay their landlords don't pay the banks, then the banks have to either seek assistance from the federal government, which inevitably is going to be part of a future bailout, because it's not just mortgage debts that are going to have problems. You're going to see credit card debts and all sorts of debts that people are going to be unable to pay once the plug was pulled on the economy. It is typically the big boys that get the federal assistance, the industries, the banks. It's the working person that usually suffers. What we're trying to do here is fill that hole. Say we're going to protect working people, protect tenants, protect people lower on the economic ladder, and then let the federal government come in with their assistance to deal with it at the higher level.
How will you find and choose the people who would get their rents suspended for this period of time? How would you know who to choose?
Well, the legislation would provide that relief to anyone that lost work because of the government-ordered restrictions due to coronavirus. The specifics of how that would be administered would fall to regulation that the appropriate state agencies would have to put in place. So they're already doing that in some respects as it relates to the mortgage moratorium that's been established at the state level. So there are already agencies that are equipped to make determinations about financial hardship and who should qualify for these things.
Great. And just where does this stand legislatively, and what happens next? Is the governor behind this? Does the governor support this idea?
The governor has not spoken about it one way or the other. We're trying to raise this up on his radar so that he realizes that we only have 7 days left until this is going to become a real crisis. There are sponsors legislatively being added by the day. We're up over 20 at this point in the Senate. 32 is a majority of the Senate, so we're getting close. Ideally, the fastest and most efficient way to do this is by executive order. I would love for the governor to do that. If he does not see fit to do that, we will try and move it legislatively.
New York State Senator Michael Janaris represents Queens. And finally, according to Johns Hopkins University, there have been 894 deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus in the United States. New York City tops the list of U.S. localities with 192 deaths and 18,000 cases of the illness. Among the dead was an apparently healthy Brooklyn Public High School principal, Desanne Romaine, considered one of the top school leaders in the city. A principal in another school using the same building has been hospitalized. Both were under 50 years old and in good health. Mark Traeger, a Brooklyn City Councilman, called Romaine's death devastating and said Mayor Bill de Blasio had placed students, teachers, and the staff at risk by failing to close schools more quickly as the virus began spreading in the city. De Blasio called the claims absolutely false. Other prominent deaths include Nashom Wooden, known by the Gray community as Mona Foote. Terrence McNally, a Tony Award-winning American playwright, died on March 24th, and world-renowned chef Floyd Cardoz Diezas died as well. He was 59. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul D'Arienzo.